views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
But I do find it funny that, yeah, the flip-flop of episodes, we've got, like, the one black elf, the Martin Freeman of Rings of Power, and then we flip over to Wakanda Forever, where I think they had two whites in this one.
Julie
Louis-Dreyfus. Right. Yeah, they had another white in it. Yeah. So they doubled the percentage.
Of course.
2% of the cast, which...
Man, that could have helped with the runtime so much just to jettison that whole story. That was...
She is still hamming it up like she's doing the Falcon and Winter Soldier kind of tone, and this was definitely not the same tone.
Definitely disconnected
from the rest
of the... By the way, spoilers for Wakanda Forever.
Just in case you weren't aware.
If you didn't know that Julie Louis-Dreyfus was a through line. Just a through line for the whole thing.
That's when you know that they were having some tough times in the writing room doing these rewrites, being like, oh, fuck, I don't... Fuck it, the Seinfeld chick, she's married to the other white guy. I don't know. They're all related, right? They all look the same. Yeah. So
we'll give her a purple streak in her hair to match the color tone of the movie.
Yeah, right?
You know? It's like...
Yeah. That's the thing they did.
They totally did.
they made her the, like, talk about, like, your psycho evil ex. Like, literally, she's a villain character.
And yes.
Yeah.
They're like... You get to be the good guy. Your ex is literally a villain, Martin Freeman. He's like, done. Great.
Yeah, she's like fun Amanda Waller. Her whole vibe is fun Amanda Waller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even in their dynamic together where she's just like trying to break off a piece of Martin Freeman, like right out the gate.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you've been working out.
Let me ride your Peloton.
Yeah. She was trying to get some Martin Freeman dick.
She was trying to get on it. Get on it.
Which I'm pretty sure that's what the marriage was all about in the first place, probably, was just mainly him just being ridden to death by that woman.
Yeah, I mean...
Being terrified of her raw sexual energy.
With both their jobs, specifically her job, it was probably just like, I don't have time to do this. I just need somebody that's constantly able to fuck. That's like, I don't have time to meet other people and do this and that.
This young recruit in the...
She's
US
probably
government.
Into like being disgusted by the person she's fucking. So she's like, "Tell me about your strong moral compass." And he's like, "I believe in good." And she's like, you're such a piece of
she's
shit.
Like, you're such a pussy. I love it.
Like smacking him in the face.
Terrible.
Oh, I think my dick is hard.
That's what she said.
I wonder if he got pegged.
Like, I know they're your friends, but can you stop yelling Wakanda Forever when you come? Please.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Okay, so we are talking about Wakanda Forever. There could be more somber tones to this conversation, though. Like, I'm glad we're getting off to a fun start. There's a lot to unpack.
Oh yes,
with this 2.5 hour movie,
50 minutes,
a 2-hour and 50-minute movie, nearly 3-hour movie. And the thing is that like it needed that amount of time to unpack the amount of stuff that it was unleashing.
It was trying to do everything. You know, with long movies, usually in a long, especially these days. I'm like, ever going to be over. I was not like that in Wakanda Forever.
I think it flowed.
The pacing was good, and there wasn't really any lull parts where it felt that it was unnecessary. You know, everything had its place in the film.
But it was interesting because there was so much going on and so much emotional investment, but a lot of the movie was slow, quote-unquote slow.
Sure.
Because it was talking.
It was a lot talkier than I expected.
Up in their feelings.
It wasn't as action heavy as a lot of Marvel in general will say at this point.
Yeah.
Well, let's get the episode going because I really want to really spend most of this really breaking this down. We have so much to fucking unpack. So, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. All things Wakanda Forever. I was going to do like one of the chants, but I'm not the one to
don't,
lead that.
Don't,
no.
Yeah,
no.
Don't do that.
No.
No. You and I will stay out of that.
Chachalalo, tachalalo.
There we go.
Chachalalo, tachalalo.
Anytime either Scotty or I says something that like is borderline problematic because we overstepped a
we're
little
just
bit,
gonna look,
we'll just look
to
at Tommy
the side.
To break back into that again. Okay, let's stop now before we right
God.
Out the gate.
Right.
These guys are gearing up by the end of the episode to drop the N-word, I guarantee. That's the energy I'm feeling right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
No. No. Is that the N-word you talk about? No.
Yeah, no.
No.
No is the N-word.
No.
Namor.
Namor.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Which, oh man, I can't wait till we get into breaking down that whole society and its differences to the comic and shit. But let's first introduce very quickly the panel. First off, my co-host on Smack My Pitch Up and a regular on GY, Tondi.
I'm in the house.
Yay!
In the pool, swimming. Oh, I'm drowning. Oh.
Namor will save you.
No, he won't.
No, actually, he won't.
He'll, like, fly just to, like, be above you as you drown.
Fair.
Well, maybe Namor, maybe Lupita Nyong'o's butt will save me.
Ooh, nice.
Man, I'm glad you brought it before I did. Holy shit. I don't know what happened in between.
She's been doing some squats.
Some of her, yeah.
Right?
Of, like the first Black Panther or Us or the list of other movies she's done. But God damn.
Now, she's always had cakes, but
that shit,
man, it was crazy. Nobody makes a cake as tasty as a crazy cake. That cake was insane.
Like, that's my first thought too. I was when they showed her, I was like, oh God.
Oh,
I don't even like cake like that. And I'm like, man, I'll take a second slice. That is
yes, yes.
That's amazing. Cake.
Them hips, if you will.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
And then when she wears the nice. Suit on, I was done. I was like, oh, God, oh, no.
It awakened something in you.
Yes. Yeah. If it didn't awaken something to everybody in the theater, I don't, like.
Load out to the theater, like, Wakanda forever.
Yes. I was like, no, I'm like a goat to T'Challa. I'm just saying, go on to T'Challa, get it.
All right. Yeah. Our next panelist is as M'Baku would say, ball-headed, what was it they said?
Ball-headed demon.
Yeah, there you go, bald, the demon. Ball-headed demon of the panel.
Because the emphasis on the fucking vibe of the
that
is,
was.
The geek father himself, Scotty P, is here.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Oh, yay.
He's going to be tiptoeing through the heart-shaped rooms
with yes.
me.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. We're
going this one.
I really love this movie.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yep, that's it. That's all we get from Scotty.
Yeah.
But them hips.
Yeah.
I will say them hips.
Our own personal M'Baku and my counterpart here on GY is next up. My co-host, Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everybody? I own that because this character in this movie was probably the second best character in the
film. I was joking with you last episode, I think, that like own the M'Baku thirst because like the thick thigh gentleman like craze is going because of Winston Duke. So
just being a big teddy bear man.
Big old thick thigh man is yeah.
See, he's not a teddy bear in either of the Black Panther movies.
Well, you could be a big bear, but he's the kind of dude who the ladies are like, I can cuddle with this man, and if somebody comes knock on the door looking for trouble, then this man is going to give them some trouble.
It won't be the him from Us.
I was about to say that. The Us part didn't work with that. Yeah.
No, that's a whole different part of the whole thirst for Winston Duke thing is like the dorky dad with thick thighs energy that he was giving in Us. There's definitely a lot of, oh my, coming from that as well.
I just love the end of the fucking film, though, when he just chops off the ship. He's like, sure, he was not going to make it today. I challenge someone
who
with
is
a throne.
Ready to challenge?
Yeah, I'm like,
challenge.
Fuck, that'd be awesome. King of Wakanda. Shuri doesn't want to be queen. So,
Yeah, obviously it was a setup for
there's like a flip flop from Thor where Thor is just like, hey, queen, you're gonna be king, and to Valkyrie, and now M'Baku is just like, I'm the dude.
I got this.
Man, there was so much I wanted from the arrangement of things. I would have loved to have seen M'Baku become king. And to see basically anybody else. Like, I love what Letitia Wright's doing in this movie,
mm-hmm.
but I still wanted to see anybody else become Black Panther. Like, I wanted to see Okoye become Black Panther because Okoye is my favorite. She's probably my favorite MCU character.
Oh, she's great.
I would have liked to have seen M'Baku become Black Panther. I would have liked to have seen her mother become Black Panther.
That's what my guess was. They were saying you haven't guessed everything yet with the Black Panther when you saw the claws come out. And everybody's like, that's Letitia Wright.
Yeah.
M'Baku doesn't have a booty like that.
True.
And Angela Bassett does.
M'Baku's thighs are about five times thicker than that.
Right.
But what I was hoping is that the big reveal would be that there's multiple Panther suits. And so, like, they got...
Well, there
like,
are, but multiple people wearing them.
Or, like, yeah, there'd be, like, three Black Panthers, you know,
right.
with the heart shade herb and shit. And it's just, like, you know, his wife and his daughter, or not daughter, his wife, his sister, and his mother, like, taking up the mantle and, like, sharing the load of being the Black Panther, and I was like ready for it to do and just have them pose like the three Spider-Men did.
You know, in that scene, somebody's got to take this herb. For a second, I was like, maybe, just maybe, Lupita is about to become, and surprise us all, was about to become the Black Panther. And it didn't happen. It wasn't really set up for that, but I just felt that energy.
It could have happened. It very well could have happened.
There's a soft lead in for this. Before we get too far into this, we got to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, the fucking Mike Thabit.
Why'd you let us go that long? Just talking.
Because I assumed you realized he wasn't introduced.
Okay. Actually, I was about to say something. I was trying to signal.
I'm taking a slight step back on this episode anyway, so that's perfectly all right. I'm going to try my best to not try to do like an accent when we're talking about like lines from the movie or something. Like there's a lot of
say it the whitest way ever.
I feel like Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, where he's trying to spell out Jehovah with the blocks. And like, if he steps on the wrong letter, he falls through. Like that's me on this episode. It's careful.
That accent's from the wrong part of Africa.
The beautiful people of Wakanda say Wakanda forever.
Yeah, yes, yeah, very monotone.
Yes.
It's an NPR review.
American, I can do my best Ira Glass impression on this episode.
next on Wakanda Forever.
Yes. No, the GUIpodcast.com. Check out all the shows on the network and subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. And yeah, let's get into it. So I really wanted to break down before anything else, besides how hard Juliette Lewis fucks, apparently, is
true.
I wanted to break down just the suddenness of like T'Challa dying in this. Like it's the first minute of this movie.
The whole first 5 minutes of the movie is just nothing but like
yeah.
Well, what's
I was gonna say that there are parts of this film that are just like are more nitpicky as far as for any kind of, minor complaints or whatever.
Critiques or anything.
Right, yeah.
That is the only problem I have with this movie, is they didn't actually give you like a closure on what it was. Like they definitely made it tie into what actually happened with Chadwick Boseman, that it was like almost seemed like a cancer that was eating away with him. Because
sure.
They make the line that he suffered in silence, and Boseman suffered in silence through his entire MCU career. I think even up way back to the James Brown movie. Like he is suffering with and doing his job.
Yeah.
I wish that just because now we're in the MCU, we're in this universe, that they had given to like a proper like explanation to people who might not have even
That's
been
tricky.
You know?
It is.
See, I feel like T'Challa's death was supposed to be diegetic because Chadwick Boseman's death was so big in real life that what we're dealing with in the movie, and it's not just like you go through that first half an hour of movie and you're like, okay, we're getting this out of the way. Yes, a tribute to this man. Wonderful. And then it's the whole movie is a funeral for Chadwick Boseman. But because that was such an impactful death, that's what it is. It's Chadwick Boseman dying, not so much just T'Challa passing away. So when they show that experience that she's having, what she's dealing with, and when she talks about how he went through it, it's just Chadwick Boseman.
Okay.
I think that is what they're trying to portray. That's why they don't give specific circumstances to what's going on there.
Right. Well, And well, first off, let me say the whole like the typical opening Marvel credits where it was nothing great, but
that was awesome.
That was
like,
gorgeous.
Oh, that was nothing but Chadwick Boseman from
and
all
Wyatt.
The different.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. That's right. Typically, there's music with it. And
that's
it was,
what,
like,
that's
totally
what they did for Stan Lee.
That's true too. Yeah.
Where it was quiet and it was just images.
Well, could you imagine if they were coming off of like Toto's Africa playing like, "Way from You," and then it's like he's dying. It'd
right.
Be really yeah. A hard.
If the movie had been released in like 1992 or something, then maybe you would see that.
Yeah. True. But I was the main point continuing the conversation was it was kind of sped up, but what they also alluded to, and I don't want to say necessarily throwaway lines, is that part of the disease came from not only because the herbs were burned and everything, but it happened when he was not on the herb. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have the herbs to cure him, which was part of the problem.
They did bring that up, and I was going to bring that up once.
So that, in a way, they did bring a closure to it. It was just sort of a, hey, this happened, and carry on.
Yeah.
Part of the challenge as well is that, and this was talked about by Ryan Coogler and some of the other actors on the movie, is that there's a delicate balance of bringing homage to, like, or to T'Challa, to Boseman, honoring him. And then there's the other side of taking advantage of, like, using that as a way of kind of, like sensationalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so by not saying, you know, they could have been like, T'Challa has colon cancer. And that would have been way too much. That would have been.
I'm not saying, literally, come out and say that's what, you know.
Yeah. That. So I think they kind of, it was definitely almost a borderline fourth wall break. Wink. Like, this is. The same thing that he was going through without overtly saying kind of deal. It was alluding to that this is like Tony was saying, it's not mutually exclusive to T'Challa and Chadwick Boseman like mourning. It was all combined in this movie. And there were times they kind of overdid it a bit for sure.
Yeah.
So
I was just going to say that I understand why they went that route. Because, I mean, I'm feeling every explanation in this discussion of, like, why they went that way. Because, yes, in my mind, once we got that, nothing else made sense. And moving forward with now who wears the mantle, like, it still is, like, Black Panther was Chadwick Boseman. Like, the person that, like, that just embodied that character.
Right.
And I understand why they kind of made that a very mirror image of what happened. I just feel like the one thing to not make it hit home so as hard would have been like a different explanation. I'm not saying like, don't come out and say that it was the same disease, but they did bring up, like you said, the herbs and was missing and he couldn't because Killmonger destroyed it. So they couldn't cure him. I get all that, but it's like, just if they had like separated somewhat, I feel like it would have still made it not feel so real.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. With the destruction of the herbs, this is something I noticed. I thought this script was extraordinarily well written under the circumstances
I agree.
In which it was created.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they rolled in several things into the script that were just kind of circumstantial to what they were dealing with, and that stuff worked really well. This may be one of the best written scripts in the MCU.
Well, especially all the, like you're saying, all the weaving that they had to do to get incorporate previous plot points or even asides that happened in the original movie or the other MCU movies and make it an important point for the plot. Like the point that they're opening up these different Wakanda centers around the world and that being the place where the French mercenaries come to try to steal the vibranium, and then you have that initial conflict, and then with one of the most powerful, I mean, Angela Bassett in this is like
is
fucking sending it in every scene that she's in. She is full like fucking Panther, like full Panther in this. When she's at the UN and just like with this like shitty like, oh yeah, you know why we're not sharing with you? Because of these motherfuckers right here. And then rolls in the French mercenaries and has this like very, I mean, full royal energy about her.
Absolutely.
In every single fucking frame.
Yeah.
And that gave me a quick thing to say too about just Angela Bassett. Like, we have to give that woman fucking all the credit.
All her flowers.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Like, she fucking like she's always brought it as the queen. You know, she's always brought it.
Well, she's brought it as Angela Bassett.
As Angela Bassett, exactly.
Yeah.
As the queen.
She's doing like a 10 level of what Angela Bassett does on screen, what they hire her to do.
Exactly.
She's like, all right, all the chips. She took her whole pile of chips and she pushed all her chips to the middle of the table.
And fucking crushed it.
You see her like seething. You can see like her jaw clenching in moments. It's,
yeah.
One of the biggest things that I love that they brought in from as far as a storyline that connects to the first film was who Shuri sees in her vision, because she's coming from a place of vengeance. That's all Killmonger was. Like, if they'd have used anybody else, like if it had been Ramonda,
right?
Like, it would have not made sense. Like,
well, only Black Panthers are in the in that version of the afterlife.
Yeah, but yeah, but she did see her later on in, I guess, the other version of the afterlife. I don't
because
know how
the old other Black Panthers are like, no, she gets in.
Yeah, like, she gets in. But like, just seeing the fact she
honorable
got Killmonger.
Are you going to tell her no?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. But the fact that she got Killmonger made so much sense from where Shuri was coming from, and because she was coming from a very dark, painful place, and it just made a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Like, because I didn't read a whole lot, but it was perfectly done.
Yeah.
But, and as we get more into, like, obviously talking about more Namor and how the movie actually wraps up, I thought this was also, like, even how it started, this is, like, ideal for, like, this is how we're ending Phase 4. This is the last Phase 4 movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is it? All right. I'm not even
Quantum Mania in February kicks off Phase 5.
Okay.
It's interesting, because Phase 4 didn't really build up to anything in itself.
It didn't.
It was a lot of setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
That's where it gets a lot of negative, like, pushback on online. Well, everything does nowadays, but like the main thing being that Phase 4 didn't do anything, and the amount of content we're about to get from Marvel and have been getting with Phase 4 as well is like a fucking avalanche. So there is a ton of setup. They're setting up bubble dimensions with Shang-Chi. They're setting up like this power struggle between
the Skrulls.
Well, there's the Skrulls, there's the Atlantis, well, formerly Atlantis.
Kamalot. We're talking about the Namor's.
Namor's
people.
His crib.
Talokan,
that's what it was. Yeah.
So you've got that, and then the superpowers with Vibranium and their conflict.
Don't we actually come with the Kree, too?
The Eternals.
Kree, because of the Marvels and all that,
The multiverse with Multiverse of Madness and the Spider-Verse.
Quantum Realm.
Like, it's... There's so much happening that are going to be hitting at the same time.
Right.
That you've got also Moon Knight, where you've got, and this comes into to Namor as well, is that like the like god people. Like, you've got Moon Knight, you've got Namor.
Deities and stuff like that,
avatars of gods.
Right.
Which is Namor, just like Moon Knight, is an avatar of a god. Like, it's the same, like, he could have shown up in Egypt. And I'm like, what's up?
Oh, well.
It's kind of dry in here. A lot of sand. Like,
it's a little more moist.
It's tangy. It's tangy.
I need the water.
Waters. But, damn it. I got to know. Actually, well, and also what Namor does is also because based on comics and the way he ended up being written is that he has been called the original mutant.
Yes.
As well. So now that we have X-Men and everything coming in, basically, and I wanted to say in general, Phase 4 is a transition phase.
Yeah, because Endgame was literally Endgame. It just ended 10 years of films.
Yep. Right. So we're getting ready for the next Avengers group and the other groups to help them.
We're going up to the peak of the coaster right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
So we're speaking of the phases, and one of the interesting things with the phases is as the production machine goes on, they're like, oh, we can take more chances. They take more chances. Something that I felt detracted from this movie is that this movie should have been rated R. There's so much like focused violence, so, and it's surrounding the story of war. Like, both sides use spears as their main weapon and they're stabbing people, but there's no blood to be seen anywhere. Right.
Especially with Shuri at the end when she like pulls herself off and it's like, the blade's clean. That makes no fucking sense. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But like, even at the beginning, like the, when the Dora Milaje are taking out those mercenary guys,
mm-hmm.
they're stabbing people.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
there's tons of dead bodies around. Yeah, you're not seeing shit.
There's only one answer to that. It's a Disney product.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's the only answer to that.
And that is, of course, true, and that's, of course, the reason, but...
Didn't want to release this on Hulu.
You know? Right.
But this was a serious movie. Like, it was, like, just tonally, all the way through, it's serious. And to go with that tone, there's a disconnect that I felt in every scene that there was violence that they didn't have.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, and I can agree with that, too, especially when they attack Wakanda. Like... It's not like we've seen attack scenes before where it's like, it's like a kind of like afterthought where you're like, okay, you know that person's dead, like it's just dropping in, and you follow the hero. Like there are focused scenes of like Namor
like people,
murdering the fuck out of people.
Like
it's
explosions
not, it's not,
and
yeah.
people flying and
it's,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
the way they made him fly.
It's concentrated like, fucking violence more than we've ever gotten in a Marvel movie because usually it's like they throw something this way and then you see the explosion and but they're already past it, right? Like mm-hmm. so you expect not to see it, right? No, this is. Concentrated fucking bites.
Yeah, yeah.
The way they make Namor fly on this is like very cool. Where he's able to make like hard turns and shit with his little Hermes wings.
Yeah,
which like doesn't make sense. But also, this is like a fish guy with wing feet. So like, fuck it. Who cares anymore?
Whatever.
The reveal of him coming out of the water is really interesting because you see those fish wings and they're flapping like dragonfly wings. And you're like, is this Goofy? And then my dude, what's his name? The actor's name.
Tanaka Huerta, I think.
Mr. Huerta.
Huerta.
Yeah, he sells the fuck out of how dangerous this man is.
Like, he is dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about another really fucking solid performance for, like, his big role. Like, he's acted before, but, like, this is his biggest role he's ever had.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, clearly.
Absolutely.
And he is fully doing it, where he is both friendly at times and, like, you get like this comfort with him, but there's also like there is a line with him that he can be the most like evil person if you push him past the point. Like there's a solid line on what he stands for,
yeah,
and what he'll do. He will do literally anything
to protect
his
people. Villain grin.
Yeah,
like the tone was set when he showed up on the shore with Shuri and Ramonda, and he comes in. He literally presents himself in peace, but the way he leaves is like, you don't want me coming back. Like it was just so that.
Yeah,
because
he said,
I will
come back and kill, I will kill you.
Exactly. It wasn't, there was no question about, but the way that turned, it was so just smooth, man.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's like pure evil. Like, that's just fucking
and
terrible.
What already threw him off, and he knew it too, was they're like, how the fuck did you even get in here?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Like, walks off and carry a big stick energy of, like, a true evil person doesn't need to prove how evil, like, how...
They're just gonna
how
do it.
Much yeah. they're gonna fuck you up.
They're just
like,
gonna do it.
They're like, I mean, if you wanna test it, go ahead. Like, this is not gonna end well for you.
And they did.
Right.
And guess what happened?
Yeah.
They fucking wrecked Wakanda.
True.
Oh, and speaking of, I did a whole episode on that character archetype, so listen to my handle is Jonathan Blade for that episode. That's it.
Nice.
Nice.
Okay. Good little slip in there on the promo. Nice. Yeah.
I do like one of the major concepts in this movie, aside from like sorrow porn, was that
sorrow porn. It's so black misery porn. It's so.
Ugh.
I did watch your little snippet on that. It is black misery porn, like straight up.
It really is.
It's like.
Damn.
But one of the main topics that it's talking about is like the similarities between these two major cultures. That they were both closed states for a long period of time. And Wakanda decided to open up, and because of that, it affected the other closed state, and that was the whole conflict. But what it does discuss is that they're different but shared histories with Vibranium. They had similar experiences of wanting to separate themselves from society and developing these futuristic cultures away from the public eye because of the nature of, like, historically within... both South America and Africa being absolutely raped of resources,
right?
Yes.
Because of the what they had available. This is completely that story being told from the perspective of
it's
people that were able to hide and keep their resources. And so it's incredibly powerful that they had these two different but very similar experiences and decided to go in two different directions with it at this point.
Yeah.
That story is like, still happening like now. There's,
yeah.
We're getting...
Except now it's oil.
But there's a setup to literally... Certain countries have invested money into certain other countries in hopes of saying they're going to be their friend. You really? It's a world power, like, hey, I mean, there's a whole, no one's using these resources. What do you think they're going to fucking
there's
do?
There's a reason why people in South America speak Spanish, as in Spain.
Well, other countries have just learned the lesson from how we did it, and they've so China does it, but China does it in a more... they're more a gentleman about how they're going about it. They're like, no, we're working hand in hand with these countries to help these countries, not just in a capitalist way, not for them to just to become consumers, although it is literally just for these countries to become consumers, but they're investing more in the growth of the countries while they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting balance. Colonialism itself is an interesting balance, because colonialism by its nature is evil, but not everything that comes out of colonialism is evil. But the point that I wanted to make off of what Mike just said is that it is interesting that the result of that these two cultures having this experience and coming together is race war. Like this movie.
Shit.
God damn it.
Yeah. You know.
Well, shit.
Ooh, cool.
But I mean, it hurts. Yeah, it's accurate.
Yeah. I was just going to bring up, because that just reminded me how they call Matt Freeman their favorite colonizer.
Right?
Yeah. That just
because,
totally...
Duh.
Like,
I love the, like, a colonizer in chains that I've seen everything or something.
Yeah, that was amazing. Oh, God.
That was good.
Who was that? That was a Koya. Koya.
I remember when the first Wakanda, when the first Black Panther movie came out, there was definitely like blowback on the internet from, well, racists, about them using the colonizer for Martin Freeman's character.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And something like, it's bullshit, like they're going to be... He is, like, from their perspective, he's a colonizer. Like, that's...
Well, and in fairness...
Open the book and read.
But hold on. Okoye using that at that point was just a jab at his character, because he did help save Wakanda. Like, they know he's not, like... evil.
It's become a joke now. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, when they say in the movie, it's like, it's a joke. And like, the people that get it know they're in on the joke. That'd be why, like, she says that to him.
A Brit calling us like a redneck or a cowboy, no matter where we are from the United States.
It's not like, yeah. So people just getting
or
too fucking.
The colonists.
Yeah.
Right.
People just getting too, whatever. It was a joke in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was a joke. But whatever.
But no, I think the way that they approached Namor and the way that they were able to incorporate Namor, his name.
Oh yeah.
To mean differently.
Oh man.
That
is good.
That
is
shouldn't
really
have worked. Like that. But it did. It did for me. I was like sold.
It's
I was
delivery.
Like, the delivery is why, because it reminded me so much of that moment in Solo, A Star Wars Story, where they're like, first name, Han, what's your last name? I don't have one. Well, you're alone. Solo.
No, it is not that fucking bad.
No, no, he's saying it should
close
not have
enough.
Like that did not work.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay, gotcha.
When he's explaining this and he's like, you know, I have no love for the surface people, and like, Namor is what my enemies call me and stuff. He sold it. He sold it very well.
Oh,
Fuck. Okay.
Like,
Better than sitting there with your hand on your hips going, I'm Namor.
Yeah,
the Submariner.
I am the Rhino. Yeah, like, don't.
I am the Rhino.
Oh, man, you had to bring in the Rhino. God damn it.
I'm sorry. I just, like, that's one of my most hated things ever is when the bad guy shows up and just, like, announces his name without any setup for it at all.
So for that scene, that whole backstory scene that he gives, which is very poignant and just another point of a heartbreak in a long 2 hours and 40 minutes of heartbreak, that scene ends and then they try to cut the tension with this like jokey line that he gives, and it doesn't work so hard because of the nature of the movie, and they don't try to sell it either. They just let it be there and just like it, then it's gone. I was like, man,
like the stinky dead fish in the room.
It did hurt. Like it will crush your bones. No, we got a suit.
Or you could do a
suit. Unless you wear a suit.
Yeah.
This way.
He even kind of does like a little head boggle with it. You're like, hey. And it's like,
meanwhile, it's a suit from somebody they previously killed.
Yeah. That's true.
The inside is just like caked in blood.
What are these fluids?
Oh, we have a few suits this way. Yakety smackety doo.
Because they went right into that, and they went back into seriousness when like showing Shuri just that they're underground kingdom, that universe.
Underwater.
Underwater, excuse me. Correct. Underwater universe that, I mean, it was gorgeous. Like, it was dark. It's the way it looked, how you envisioned it would look. But I love their hand gesture. I mean, it looks like a Hadouken, but it's like
that's exactly.
But, it's a mimic the sunrise because he gave them the sun utilizing vibranium, and that
right.
Like, they do make you understand Namor so well in this film, as far as where he comes from.
Oh, yeah. Right,
but
it's
also to the point of the Mad Titan on certain levels. He wants to destroy the surface world. It's just you know, condensed down to one single world versus an entire universe.
No,
right?
No room for compromise. This is my world. These are my people.
This is how it's going.
And
this is what's going to fucking happen.
A, B, and C.
Namor is like any of my female friends that are below 5 foot. Like, they're all really mean. Like, he's been fucked with by surface people. Like, his whole formative like years, like in his youth and shit, and been watching people get decimated by surface people, and him shrinking away from that is because he doesn't see any goodness in people. So
if one of your first experiences with mankind is, oh, look, it's a fat Mexican kid in swimming trunks, shoot him. You're probably going to
that's gonna be a little skewed there.
That's just Texas.
Remember the Alamo. I thought that he finally saw that through Shuri at the end, and I love, again, we get Ramonda at the end. It's like, show him who you are. And I'm like, we got that balance now where, no, she will fuck you up Killmonger style, but here's my mom and here's T'Challa. Here's that nobility mixed with that. And we got that by her sparing Namor. But then we get that, the end of the movie scene where Namor's like, they will come to us. You motherfucker.
It's a little bratty, though. She's like, she's honorable and stuff, but she does have a little bit of like, mom,
she wanted to kill him so bad. She wanted to murder him so bad.
And I just remembered the difference on why she sees her and not like another Black Panther, is because there was that whole discussion about where the relative of the dead will come see you when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
When you take the herb is when you go to the place of all the previous Black Panthers. That's the difference.
Okay.
Ha-ha.
You're right. Ha-ha. No, 100%.
Speaking of the ghost of Ramonda, Ramonda's death killed me. It killed me more than the beginning of the movie. Like, I was like...
Right?
Yeah.
It seemed mean. Like,
it was. It was just fucking mean.
She's like, what the fuck?
She's gone through the trials of Job in her life, but also, let's murder this bitch or something.
Hey, you know what? Awesome connection there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and she spells it out for people that might not have got that. When she's talking to Okoye, she's like, I have this, that. Have I not sacrified everything?
Man, that scene was hard. Yeah.
Fucking.
With that, I mean, there are plenty of films that have that conversation of it's unfair what's been done to a person, but sometimes people get broken beyond repair, and then sometimes they become as much of a problem as, they turn into the villain in a degree. And there was, like, a hint of that in that conversation with that thing Okoye, where she's like, no, you fucked up. And she's like, I thought we were over this shit.
So in the moment, it hurts. It hurts a lot, but... Okoye definitely got what she deserved.
Oh, sure, but like there was that moment of her being like
the queen didn't have her executed,
like hard assed as fuck. Where she's could've. Like she's not fucking
she
around
had
anymore.
Her killed.
And if they had just pushed that just a little bit further, where she was starting to make decisions based on rage and not on her honor and what's good for Wakanda, there would have been slightly more of that conversation of like broken beyond repair. But she was still kind of hanging in there, like when she died.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't that level of justification for her being kind of
put down.
Well,
she was saving someone who wasn't even her child. I mean,
she was fully put the fuck down.
And you see her keep that as much level head as she can be, being the queen and understanding. But you started to see where she got a little more personal when Okoye used her own personal story things like, I lost my husband. It's like, but you can go see your husband. I cannot see, you know, and you know, like,
yeah.
like strangers that we don't know in a whole other kingdom have my daughter. Like, that's when she started getting personal, because Okoye made it personal first.
Well, and one of the big twists on that is when you stood by Killmonger when he took over our country.
That was a personal.
That was a nice twist where it reminded me a little of a fucking Cobra Kai, where they're talking about the match and he's like, yeah, like I broke the rules and I got like penalized for it. You broke the rules and won. It was that same kind of energy with that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, yeah, don't forget, like, you did stand by Killmonger.
Yeah.
And her being like, fuck, yeah, I did.
You know what strikes you about that moment? In that scene, you feel like that's a conversation that has not been had.
Yeah.
They have not fleshed that out at all.
Just
marinating.
Just all this energy is just.
T'Challa came back, we're cool.
Yeah.
Shh.
Yeah.
And then just all that, you know, it's one of those things when you get upset, everybody does it to a degree. When you get upset, you're talking about the thing, but then all the eight other things that haven't been addressed come rolling out too. And so, this and oh man, just heart wrenching.
Absolutely.
That was harsh though. That was
a rough because even some of the other elders were like, whoa, and she was like, no, fuck y'all, queen, chill out.
And it's something that I didn't think. It took me a second to kind of get what they were doing at the end, where she's like burning the burial robes, and then you think about, she hadn't had a chance to like fold those yet. Like, she had put them through the laundry and they were in a basket somewhere getting ready to be folded. But, and like, then her mom dies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, that is just like, oh, before anybody else goes, let me get rid of this shit. Like, I don't need to, like, this isn't something I planned on wearing out a lot.
Ceremonial burial
robes.
Yeah.
Very specific outfit.
Yeah. So that burning it at the beach thing, that like this is like symbolic of like no more deaths.
No.
Good call.
I actually, man, that credit scene, that world building in the credit scene, actually did not. I like it as an idea. I didn't like that credit scene. I like the idea of it, but I don't like the cynical world building that is implied by the existence of that. I don't like kids in anything, really. Yeah.
honestly, kids, I mean, basically.
Let me again throw out probably what the whole idea behind a lot of that is, I bet you, or at least to some degree, is they need a Black Panther in the future.
Yeah, that's the cynical world building. That's why they have young people as part of the phase, just generally, because they're like, oh, we need... This is an ongoing thing that we're going to keep going until it's
I get that. It sounds like, and I can completely understand that, because that does come across as annoying, where in the past when Marvel did that, it was almost like happenstance, where now they're like shoehorning that shit in to leave it open, where before it necessarily wasn't an open door. It was kind of like, maybe. Now it's like, no, this shit's here. We plan on using this down the road kind of thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But to be honest, they've been doing that shit in the comic books for years. I mean, we're talking about characters that have been around for 50, 60, 70, sometimes like close to 100 fucking years that some of these characters have been around.
We know there's a difference between cinema and comics, though.
Yeah, but
as far as storytelling.
But that's the thing, is that a lot of the MCU is starting to mimic what they've done in the comics, where you have different versions of characters and different runs of things. You have like young versions of characters and older versions of characters and alternate versions of characters. And part of that is why comics have been successful, is that everybody can pick their version of what they want and enjoy it.
Why there's been 50 billion reboots every like 10 years.
That's the thing that was so frustrating about She-Hulk, is that like She-Hulk wasn't, and Ms. Marvel and a lot of the TV series stuff wasn't meant for everyone. Like, you can enjoy it, and anybody has the opportunity to enjoy it, but you aren't maybe the focal point of who they're aiming for. So if you don't like She-Hulk, that's fine.
Because there's a million other properties.
There's a million
there
other things. Yeah. And like, there's one thing that happened in the post credits of the last episode that has any effect on the MCU.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, even for the people who don't like it, there's enough resources now. You can go get the highlights and find out without having to watch the whole thing.
Just diversifying, like the comics have done, where everybody can watch their own version of things. There's going to be more, you know, young adult focused Marvel stuff. There's going to be more adult focused Marvel stuff with like Deadpool and Punisher and the Midnight Suns and shit that they're doing. So yeah, it's fine. It's going to be fine.
No, it is all fine. None of it. Well, In this movie, none of it is bad. It's fine. Like, I didn't really care for Riri, actually, but that's fine.
She was going too big. I'm sorry. Like, I...
Yeah.
Everything was just this, like, super... Like, she was doing, like, theater acting where she was going for the back rows of, like, what do you mean you're from Wakanda?
Well, she's supposed to be amazed because, you know, the world has found out that Wakanda is this incredible hidden power that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
And they're black people. And she's a black scientist on the rise. I get that. She's a young person. Of course she's, like, mesmerized by this interaction. It wasn't her story, and they didn't have enough time to do enough with her to make her fit into the story for my taste.
Like, Black Panther in Civil War.
It was a hard push.
Fit in better. Like, there was it didn't feel shoehorned, and Riri definitely did feel a little shoehorned in this. I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was almost cartoony in some of her acting, like when she's, you know, sees like a Dora Milaje, Milaje, and there's Wakandans in her fucking dorm room. I was waiting, and she's like throwing speakers at them. Like, it's just fucking weird.
Heater. A fucking space heater.
Well, it was a speaker and then a space heater.
She was like, I'm going to, really?
And they're like, you brought a spear in here? And she's like, you brought a spear in there? I was waiting for like a moment of cartoony, because it was such a goofy approach to like her character to a degree.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mind the suit. I didn't mind her being in the story. But yeah, I think that... I don't know if that was notes that she took and just went big with the character, or...
Well, I think she was supposed to be some kind of tension break, maybe. Yeah,
possibly. Well, and of course, as rolling over from what we were just even discussing, we know a lot of the characters that they're also building is basically young Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Our next Avengers and stuff like that, and she is definitely in there, so it's... They had to give her a point, and she'll probably end up, depending on what happens, either... Because what, Armor Wars was supposed to be a series, but now they're saying it's a movie that she was also supposed to be involved with.
Something like that, yeah. And she's... there's a lot of stuff, conversation.
She's got a series coming out.
Yeah, there's Ironheart's coming out, too. But let's take a break. We're running a little long on the first half here, but yeah, there's so much to talk about. Take a listen, and we'll be right back.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-winged animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there's another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F.U. Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
We're back for the second half of Wakanda Forever. But before we dig back into this epic of a movie, we're going to talk about our sponsors. First, of course, is Amazon.com, a company that's ruining the world. One package at a time, but...
But it's not as, at least, like, you know, his wife's taking it to him.
That's
his
true. Wife,
she's like,
she's doing like very cool stuff with her billions of dollars that she has now.
Yeah,
so
how could you not?
Yeah.
Got to get those tax write-offs.
She's got to, like Ace Ventura, yeah. Forever Unclean, but it's just having been married to Jeff Bezos for so long. Yeah. Yeah, but Amazon.com, we all, like, seek... That's our, like, on-the-down-low purchase thing. Is like, nobody's really, like, proud of ordering from Amazon, but you got to do it sometimes.
I know plenty of people who are proud. They don't give a fuck about Bezos.
That's true.
That's true.
Which is, like,
But if you're going to order through Amazon, do it through our link, so at least we get some of the money instead of Amazon. Just go to GUIpodcast.com, click on the link on our homepage of Shop Amazon, and we get a percentage of the money you spend. So you're spending the same amount, we're getting some of it instead of Amazon. So,
woohoo!
Boom!
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. And with the holiday season coming, there's a good likelihood you're gonna have to order something from Amazon. Just make sure, as our gift, a gift to us for the holiday season, you're
which
doing
is also like
link.
A gift to you as well, because you also get to help jab it to Jeff Bezos.
Yes, exactly. You know. Yeah, like, fuck the man.
So, yeah.
And give us money. The other way to help us out is also a way to come up with some Christmas present ideas this holiday season. We're talking about Tee Public.
Woo!
We've got all sorts of designs available to you at Tee Public. Go to GUIpodcast.com/store. That'll send you to our Tee Public store where you can look at all the very cool designs. We got like close to 60 designs now on the page.
And you said you were leaving up the Halloween stuff a little bit longer?
Leaving that up through the end of the year in case you wanted to get some spooky stuff for Halloween from our Halloween selections for Christmas, then yes. We're going to do that. I'm going to put up a couple of Christmas designs we have. It's like the GUI logo with a Christmas hat and shit, you know, that kind of stuff. Those will be going up here probably by the time this releases. And yeah, lots of cool designs. If you go through our link at GUIpodcast.com/store, we get even more money than if you just buy it by searching it on TeePublic. So make sure to do it that way.
Woo!
And yeah,
do
buy
it.
Some cool stuff for your family. There's stuff that they don't have to know the shows to enjoy the designs.
True.
True.
Or yeah. Just give your grandmother like the Live, Laugh, Love human centipede design on like a
she'll
coffee
have
mug.
No,
give your
idea.
Grandmothers the all motherfuckers need Odin.
No, give her the Live, Laugh, Love. She may not recognize that that's supposed to be like the intestinal tract, the spelling out Live, Laugh, Love. So she'll be like, oh, I do Live, Laugh, Love.
Oh, yeah.
And just not realize what's happening. And then you can get pictures of your grandmother drinking out of a human centipede mug.
That's awesome. So, yeah.
Thank God for grandma's astigmatism.
Yay. It's that live and laugh and love is inside us, grandma. Oh, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Oh,
fucking. Now, that's our sponsors. That's all we got. Now, I'm moving on to what really fuels our fires here on the show. We're talking about the booze that we ingest, the thematic choices that we make while we talk about all this geekery. We're talking about what we're drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey.
What we're drinking. We've got some choices here. First off, Donnie was nice enough to bring some tasty beverage for us to do. And by tasty, I mean, oh, no.
Yeah, we've got the good stuff.
It's
fucking delicious. It is.
So it goes with the theme of the movie. It's from Mexico, an ancient beverage of pleasure. It is Espolón Tequila Reposado.
I think that really depends on what you mean by pleasure. If you mean like getting naked and fighting your best friend, then yes, that would be.
So tequila has never been that for me. That's what bourbon is. But tequila is actually a clean drunk, feel good, wake up not in horrible pain. That's my experience.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You're the one.
Yeah.
And technically tequila is the only upper considered when all alcohol is a downer.
Tequila doesn't make me crazy.
It. Well, if I drink it in quantity, it will, I mean, one shot is not going to do it for me.
Well, but that's, I mean, if that's I were to any
drink,
alcohol.
If I were to drink tequila, like,
one
forever.
Shot and then I'm trying to fight all of you, it's that I wanted to fight all of you and am using
exactly.
Tequila as an excuse.
I'm saying tequila, if I drink tequila, like, I'm going out and, like, how I'll drink bourbon, like, tequila doesn't.
Sir, doesn't are you saying you're going like to, Hobbit, are you going to take a shot of this tequila, jump out of your room in a green Speedo and say, I'm Namor, bitch, and try to fight everybody?
No, I'm going to start yelling Wakanda Forever in a really problematic accent.
Everyone else will beat your ass for you.
You're right.
I'm trying to scratch everybody with my claws.
People are like, what the fuck?
See you down on the ground trying to talk to Diane. Meow.
I'm like running downstairs screaming in the streets, and you guys are like, don't know. Don't know.
Be like, oh, He'll figure it out. Yeah. He'll
figure it out. Running through Gilpin court with his arms crossed like, oh!
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Forever. Come on. Forever.
Come on, guys. Forever would be the amount of time before you saw me again.
Right. Yes. This got deep.
We got toast here with the tasty, I guess, tequila here.
It's good.
Yeah,
to Chadwick.
Chadwick
Boseman.
Wakanda forever.
Yes, yeah, just good tequila.
Yeah.
Smooth.
It is.
It's the good stuff.
You say that as you...
Oh, that tastes like so many previous bad decisions.
Oh. I haven't taken a shot in a while. That's
not
why.
For everybody.
Where it's just the tang is there that I haven't had in
a
good while.
That's the liquor that like has that haunted note to it. You know, like I can taste a lot of regret on the back end there.
This is me crying on a street corner on Broad Street, just laying on the ground. Oh yeah. Mm. Oh, yes. Notes of my visits to Longwood.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Notes of me rage screaming at friends over doing basically nothing that I took major offense to. Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Been there, done that.
Yum, yum, yum. So tasty. Thanks, Dundee. Yeah. Appreciate you.
It's all love.
No. It's delicious, Donnie. Thank you.
Yes.
Actually, as far as like tequilas go, I'm not puking, so that's a great sign that's a better quality. Actually, really wasn't that bad. With some tequilas, I can smell it, and I feel absolutely fucking nauseous just by smelling it. This one was actually able to take down, and it was fine.
Is like, cheap tequila's gross?
Yeah, it's really fucking gross.
Yeah. You ever had two fingers?
I don't think so.
No, don't.
Don't, yeah.
But I've had like aristocrat tequila and stuff
that's,
like
anything aristocrat's not what it says it is. It's just pure
or
evil.
Bowman's, yeah.
It's pure like venom fucking. It's nothing what it says
that,
it is.
That's the stuff squeegeed off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so for the next one, I brought a bottle of wine for us to enjoy.
So good.
The Auspicion Cabernet Sauvignon from California. And the reason why this ties in is actually, I got to tell a little bit of a wine nerd story that dates back to the 1850s.
Oh, shit.
In the 1850s, there was a blight that took out the majority of the vineyards in France.
Oh, suspect, yeah.
And so in a way of combating that, the French begrudgingly grabbed vines from California, mm-hmm. and then spliced their branches onto the stronger California vines that were immune to the blight, because the blight actually came from the States and the vines had adapted to resist them basically. Mm-hmm. So the French vines that are old grapes now, like, I mean, hundreds of years old vines and stuff, are actually roots from California vines. There's this cross-pollination between the vines that happened a couple hundred years ago that now has a resistance to blight and fungus and stuff that it didn't have before. It's stronger because of
unification.
Unification too. So like I'm seeing such a through line of that and the heart-shaped herb from Black Panther, where there's these two different cultures on other sides of the world from each other that have similar experiences and have like a plant that does similar things, and that cross, you know, the cross like pollination or whatever, the using one to help redevelop the other one, mm-hmm. when it was stolen from them, mm-hmm. Is very much that same story of like French and California wines.
Yes.
Back in the 1850s.
Well done, sir.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
good call.
I did read about that a few years ago because I had no idea up to a certain point.
Bring that up to like an actual French person that's into wine and they will get mad.
Yeah. Calm the fuck down.
Or you can just look at them and say, hey, you're welcome for that. You're welcome for Hitler.
Fuckers.
One for us, you wouldn't have wine and you wouldn't have, you know, France, so
be Vichy land right now.
That'd be fucking,
not, you're welcome.
That whole part would be West Germany. So
exactly, because guess what, y'all couldn't handle that shit. Yeah. Just saying.
Anyway, so Auspicion. Yeah. The reason I chose this one specifically, it's from California, so California grapes, but also auspicious to be successful. And the back reads, Auspicion symbolizes the mystical connection between us, yet celebrates our own unique individuality. And I think that's something that Wakanda Forever definitely did by showing the differences between those two cultures as much as they shared this common source of like vibranium being a major part of their society.
Well, and even to say we're jumping right into it as well, the fact that Shuri didn't choose T'Challa's suit. You figured she would have followed T'Challa's.
She did the one with more rhinestones on it.
She got the bedazzled suit. But again, that was totally like the Vision with Killmonger, and everything was totally like, okay, I get it
she
now.
She took that
and,
color tone.
Oh, yeah. She definitely, but you totally think when someone takes over the mantle, they take over the same suit.
Well, that's just what T'Challa did with his
father.
Well,
there were
father.
Several suits. Right. T'Challa had like three different suits.
Yeah.
That he wore throughout.
Yeah, the first suit, and then he had the suit that got purple the more he got punched.
I love how
I get purple when I get punched too, but in a very different way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The one like nod they gave to that was in her suit when she like blew up the mountain. Remember, because she like, Namor was kicking her ass when she was up against like this giant, that version of a mountain. Mm-hmm. And then like it just, the whole mountain like exploded when she finally hit it. That was awesome.
Yeah. But you could also tell she added her own thing to it because she had her little like fist gun.
External blasters, which she brought into the first Black Panther.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. This was just the more refined condensed version. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
So speaking of unification through individuality, and this is way outside the purview of the podcast, but something I noticed that was really interesting to me that I probably noticed in the first movie, maybe not, but if maybe you know, maybe you don't, Africa is the most genetically diverse continent on the Earth as far as the people that live there natively or whatever. This movie, Wakanda, is interesting to me because Wakanda is not like a contiguous people. Like if you look at the cast members of this movie, there are, it's like every phenotype of African is represented from like around the, every kind of black person you could look like is in the movie. So Wakanda is not like a, it might be culturally unique, but like the genetic groups that are feeding into Wakanda
are from all over.
They're from all over Africa. Like every possible look that you could have as a black person. Like I dare somebody to watch this movie and ever be like, again, man, all black people look the same.
Yeah, no shit. Wow, he's 100% right. And but, same thing could be said about the first one. The first one, because like a lot of these same characters are the same characters. And,
oh yeah, yeah.
And they do. There's so many good choices on the camera angles, like during a dialogue, during an elongated speech where they show the reactions of other people in the court, you know, to what's being said. And they give you that view. They give you that image, not just from far out, but just close up view of all these different cultural differences.
Well, they do that as well with the costume design and the design of Wakanda itself is pulling all these influences from all over Africa, whether it be like the lip plating or the neck and wrist.
Yeah, the different tribes.
The mud and the dreads.
Scarification. Even
the blankets that are used as shields by the plains tribe or whatever.
The border tribe.
The border tribe.
Yeah.
That is reminiscent of, I forget what part of Africa, but they made sure to kind of represent all the different parts of Africa with what Wakanda was. It was supposed, because like, I think we lose track, or well, I have in my experience because of the lack of being taught African history, you think of Africa as this one unit when it's a continent, bro. Like
there's a lot more going on there.
It's big, bro. Like
there's a whole lot of different, very different cultures with a lot of different languages and different experiences and different histories. And on the West, we don't really think about it like that because we don't get taught that shit. So having Wakanda represent all these different cultures is kind of a way of saying like, there's a lot to pull from here. There's a whole lot of Africa.
Absolutely.
And in that spirit, did anybody have anybody show up in any kind of wear? Cultural wear?
I saw one guy in a daishiki, but...
there was a group that was... It was a whole family. It was like nine or 10 people, the row in front of me. And one of the women basically wore, I don't know the technical term for the darb, but Ramonda's style, where she had that.
Nice.
Starts off with, it blocks enough of the hair and then widens up and flattens up.
It
was pretty fucking rad.
That's I watched something about the costume design from the first Black Panther, and that is from, I think that's from South Africa, that style of headdress is from.
But Latifah used to wear
it. It was solid white. I saw it when I came in, and I remember looking over the mic, and I was like, excited. I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, we got fucking, that's awesome. Because, I mean, you don't see that. You don't see that. And I thought it was awesome that someone fucking was like, no, I'm gonna fucking wear this. You know, I thought it was badass. That's all.
Absolutely.
And she rocked the fuck out of it. She looked fucking, yeah.
Well, and even something minor, like, again, we're just talking about, like, costume and details for stuff. Me, as doing body piercing and stuff for multiple years, not only the different groups in Wakanda, but now with Namor, you see where the septum piercings, the plugs, ears, plugs for the ears. All that is very, very tribal instinct, like going back to bare minimalism, even though like mine is shiny metal.
Or tribalism. And
But it all stems from, that's where it all stems from.
Bone.
And bone, wood, or stone.
Stone, yeah.
Was everything.
It's just, you're right. Yeah. It's awesome to see just
like, I wear stuff that's way more comfortable now, but that's why I always keep, like, I've had wood plugs, stone plugs, different things that I've worn. I just keep it very simple now because I'm just like, I don't go out in public as much to dress up, but that's how I accessorize.
When I had a septum piercing, I had a roommate that was a piercer that gave me this thing that they couldn't sell. Nobody would buy it at the shop, so she just got it and she gave it to me. And it was this like tusk piercing where it had like the 14 gauge and then you could screw it in on both sides. And I put it in and I'm like, I feel uncomfortable wearing this. Like, it felt very racist.
Yeah.
they had big balls,
There is some stuff where you're definitely like, ooh, that design definitely should not work for everybody. But just like, even like Namor's just like, he had that general like green stone type in his.
It was very cool looking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, but that's where like a lot of like my young adult stuff came from, was the tribalism, getting back to like, you know, that type of mentality, community, tribal, you know, stuff. You feel it with the different people, Wakanda and Namor and everybody, where it was just like, I'm kind of represented.
You're reaching for any.
I am. But it felt good to see that on the big screen, you know.
One of my favorite parts, plural, of this film was, and I want us to bring that back. Like, I know we've gotten to the murals and stuff like that, especially around Richmond. You know, we promote, you know, professional mural paintings as, you know,
as opposed to
just tagging.
Mm-hmm.
But like, can we get back to storytelling in paintings on walls, please? Like, I've always loved that shit. Like, I know it goes back, you know, all the way to hieroglyphics and all that, and that's how stories were told. But like, I love that cutscene, you know, with the post-credit scene with Namor, where he's painting the most recent story with him and Shuri, and I'm like, no, that's how that shit gets told. I love that. Like, can we get back?
Absolutely.
I want that style. I want actual paintings, not like carvings. I want people to like paint the stories.
I mean, did you remember that in Midsommar?
Yes.
They were telling the story before it would happen.
And I love that. Like, I want that. Can we just tell stories through that?
But
like,
even more,
bring
so
that back anyway.
Like, our architecture in the States is bland. Like, I mean, European countries as well, is that, you know, there isn't this like desire to like brightly paint stuff, to like have like hard contrasts and colors. And that, I feel, that changes your feeling going through the city. Like, you go through you see these scenes in Wakanda Forever and Black Panther, but it is reminiscent of a lot of African cities where it's brightly colored. There's like bright reds and blues, and you know, that's culturally like part of the thing. But, and then you come to like any American city and it's just like,
cool,
soft grays and
brick
browns
and metal.
That's why I draw like, I love that contrast, because a city can still have those
character
earth tone, but they can still have its earth tones, you know, as a base, but you said it, the character you can add on top of that while still having the softness. Like they're both can exist in a balance that gives each city its own individuality, or gives city like life. Like, and I think that I know, like I said, Richmond is, well, I can speak to you now, has started, like, especially with the murals, like you're seeing a lot of bright colors in those. We're seeing where artists are getting a lot of freedom when they show their, oh, this is what I want to put on this wall. And like, you're seeing very bright colors, right. You're seeing very bright artwork. You're seeing a stark contrast to the dullness of what a city brings.
Unless the owner of Sabai owns that wall, and then that matter.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah. I just think
that's a Richmond inside joke,
right?
It shouldn't seem odd or something you have to go the extra mile to sell somebody on in your city.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
The thing
you know.
Is, I actually feel that most American city, most big or older American cities do have characters, just not downtown. But they always have an older part of the city. Richmond is an example of that, where they try to maintain a certain level of that older part of the city because it is the character of the city.
The bottom and slip
and air. And I will say, I do agree with that. My second time to Vegas earlier this year, I actually stepped off the strip and off Fremont. That was mainly where I focused my first time, was the main strip in the Fremont. And I went to visit Nightmare Toys in like kind of like the business district area, but there was so much like deviation
or some of those older casinos.
But I mean, just going away completely from the casinos into like just another district where it was all restaurants and like local shops, and it was almost like their version of a Carytown, just more sprawled out. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more life there. Like, I was like, fuck, this is, it was awesome because like, you know, no one knows Vegas has this, because what do you see when you see Vegas? You see the strip. Like, that's what you see.
Yeah. Definitely no underwater sun though.
No underwater sun. No one's gonna be able to top that. No one can top the underwater sun.
But there's an Eiffel Tower. So
I appreciated how challenging showing like the underwater city must have been for filming, because you have like, they had to have like CGI'd the hair and like
so
the garments
actually, I
flowing.
Thought that it was not the best representation of that, of a culture underwater. There were a bunch of scenes that were intercut in there where it looked like they were underwater. And then there were other scenes that were underwater where it just looked like they were just regular in a studio.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. It felt like it was a real struggle, like I guess what they were trying to achieve for the final image,
but
on that. You know?
The budget alone, well, just to animate even like 5 minutes of
that's
an entire
saying,
city.
Like,
underwater is difficult, period. Oh, which is why, like, if you look at like most modern underwater worlds and stuff, there's always that air bubble.
Like Aquaman?
Yeah, like Aquaman. Yeah, you know, well, just anything.
They even
Star Wars, all sorts of stuff. Exactly.
Namor had his little, like, bachelor pad that was, like, that he was doing all his mural painting and stuff, speaking of, that was not underwater.
Yeah.
That was, like, his spot. That was, like, his joint, because he could breathe air. And that was where a lot of the dialogue and conversation and all that happened, because they didn't have to animate it underwater and be in the fucking giant mech suit thing, which, by the way, she's going through these like water, like waterways and stuff through all these tunnels in this giant fucking suit. And I was waiting the whole time for it to hit a rock.
Like
bust
shit.
Open or something.
Bounce
it's almost
off.
Like they Donnie Darko with that shit, where there was like a wormhole that he created for
like
her to follow.
Like driving
through.
Driving a Hummer down a UK road. Like, I mean, it just is not. That is going to end very poorly.
So the sad part is we all could imagine that. That's the fucked
it's like
up part.
Like halfway over into the other lane.
No, I found that really that scene really interesting, because it paid homage to something that exists in that part of the world, the cenotes, which are they're like natural aquifers that exist around the ancient cities, that are like basically tunnels, caves of water that exist around the cities. It's how they transferred water in and out of the city for now. I want to call it Telocan, but the capital of the Aztec Empire, for some of the Mayan cities. That is part of the natural infrastructure of those cities, and I found it really interesting that they then melded that into this underwater, this ocean culture that they created. I thought that was really interesting, and it's a call out for nobody except somebody who knows, but I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's something that speaking of call out for nobody, something that I kept coming back to, hearkening back to, that I've actually at least mentioned offhand to Tondi before, is that I've found out recently through TikTok that that there was trade that happened between Africa and South America before the Vikings, before Columbus, before all of that.
Yeah.
Columbus had in his notes that he saw like Africans in South America when he was checking shit out. Like, that's the thing that happened that nobody gets taught. Everybody lost their shit when the Vikings were discovered in Canada. Like, oh, we have a Viking longhouse in the Canada.
Right.
That was like hundreds of years after there was trade happening between Africa and South America. So like there, even in our prehistory, not being discussed a lot, there is a connection between these two different cultures.
Yeah.
These two different continents. And so it was interesting to see that kind of thrown together again on screen, you know, like in some way that there is some
absolutely
conversation mm-hmm. about it.
So, no, it was interesting to the throwaway line when Namor talks about his mother hearing stories about Wakanda was interesting, because how was that?
So, yeah. Like how there has to have been like a much more ancient connection between these two nations than
right. What we know. And as far as we know, these are the only now two places that have the vibranium. But also, there's the throwaway line of, well, it was a meteor and it could have broken up. It could have landed in other places as well.
Meteors that do.
As and we don't know about.
You know.
So it really sounds like that they're still pulling the stretch on vibranium. Everybody's got to have vibranium. And
it's the ultimate resource.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's literally do anything.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's the ultimate resource.
Well, that was also my question, is how did Namor and his people use the vibranium? Because also they've talked about where vibranium is best, kind of like adamantium with Wolverine, where it still has to be liquefied and molded into what you need it.
They've already established in the in-universe that it Sonics are how you manipulate vibranium.
Black Panther,
that's true.
Telokan has sonic technology. It's like the only. It's besides the exploding water bombs. It's the only technology that we see.
Good call. Which yeah, you're cool right. You're effect. Right. Yeah.
Can
good
we talk
call.
About the exploding water bombs? Oh, it would like unleash a goddamn ocean in one bomb. Yeah. Holy fuck!
So, speaking of, did you guys? This is probably only me, but you've seen Team America: World Police, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You remember when they blew up Panama?
Yes. So are you just like laughing whenever he's like just drowned? Fucking
No, because it was horrible because all these black people were dying. But yes, immediately came to mind Team America: World Police, and I felt bad. I felt bad, but I was like, I didn't make the connection. It's just there,
right?
Can we also talk about like in that scene, which was fucking vicious? But M'Baku is doing his best. And he breaks his fucking staff over Namor, and then he gets the most hardcore fucking punch I've seen.
Should have gone straight through his fucking chest.
Right.
No shit. I don't know if anybody's ever been table's ever been punched in the chest.
Oh, it sucks.
That shit fucking sucks.
In elementary school, man, in sixth grade, a fight stopped because of how badly I responded to being punched in the chest. Like,
most people respond badly to being punched in the chest.
Yes.
These kids, I forget why they were even fucking with me. I don't know. But they like this one kid punched me like right there.
Oh, the sternum.
Oh, man.
And then I was like,
that's a stop. I mean, that's especially if you know how to throw a punch, not even with the power that, you know, obviously Namor threw it in, but if you know how to throw a punch, put your weight into it, and you punch someone square in the fucking chest, they are done. They are done.
Well, I thought he was dead. Like, the people that were trying to hurt me were like, oh, shit. And, rolled after that.
Two things. In Rocky IV, Stallone got punched in the chest by Dolph Lundgren, and it put him in the hospital because his heart stopped.
Yeah.
Thing Damn. Number two is Marvel movies deal with a very specific budget. It's usually very tight. So effects are going to be sometimes good, sometimes not so good.
Yeah.
But does anybody remember the specific scene with M'Baku and his boys standing on the dock with the worst effects? I don't think it was green screen. I think it was the volume.
The background effects. I noticed
it looked
that
so bad. I think it was the volume. I don't think it was a green screen, but it looked terrible. It looked so bad.
I noticed a couple scenes where the background, like behind the people standing there, looked like 1980s level
was,
of...
Yeah, it was like Flash Gordon.
And that's unfortunate to say about this one, that there were a couple of times where it was just like, really, Disney? Come on. Yeah. You've got the money.
That's come up in conversation lately, that the way that they treat their CGI teams on Marvel.
Oh, the
Marvel,
overworked?
They're
yes.
overworked to
yes.
death, and they're put under completely unreasonable timelines on getting this stuff out. And so that's why you're seeing like trailers coming out and people are like losing their shit, like, this looks like shit. And it's because
it's not finished.
It's not finished until like the day before it drops in theaters, because digital technology, they can do that shit. They can work up
right,
to the midnight
right.
hour. And even then,
and they can replace it after the fact, like they did with Cats.
Well, Blech. They've done that with a few films now, where they've sent in new versions of things to fix shit later.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's a different conversation, but that is a problem that you don't
right.
If you are having a CGI heavy film, you need to make sure that the people working on it have the time to do it.
Yeah,
exactly.
No shit.
Yeah, where it didn't. I don't want to say it necessarily messed with the flow of the movie, but. It definitely was it was eye catcher. Yeah, it was an eye catcher where you're just in going, oh, this scene is about to, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. No, and it is a deterrent. It takes you out of the film. It's just not a good. It's not a good look, bro. It's not a good look, Disney. Come on, man.
And as emotional and heart heavy as this one was to end Phase 4.
Yeah.
Bro, finish right.
Put that money.
Finish
put that
right.
money in, man.
Yeah.
So
that's
Get
actually
the time.
Something else I have an issue with is that this is supposed to be an entertainment movie. And I don't mind things being, actually enjoy things being sad. What I discovered in like analyzing this movie is what I enjoy is melancholy, actually. I don't enjoy sad. But this movie does not really give you a catharsis at the end. It's sad all the way through. Like, even when Shuri has a realization, she finds herself and kind of works through her grief a little bit, she's still crushed at the end. And the mid-credit scene, it still involves those crushing emotions. Like, oh, here's the spitting image, this legacy of my brother who's lost as I'm trying to wrap up mourning my brother. Let me mourn some more. Like, she's happy to see this man, but she is just... She is broken, and that's how we leave the movie.
And so is the fucking crowd.
Yeah.
The audience that I was in, when he was like, I'm T'Challa. I'm careful about how I say T'Challa now, thanks to... thanks to Tondi. Like,
that was awesome.
Fully fucking put me on Front Street with that shit.
Really?
Like a year or two.
That was the title of the GLNX after that, where Tondi's like, it's T'Challa. Because you kept...
I was saying Chatala.
I've said it... See, okay. So no one's correcting me, so I'm assuming I've been saying it right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know it's T'Challa. I just was saying it wrong. Anyway, that being said, when he's like, I'm T'Challa, son of T'Challa, like the whole crowd was like, you heard like sniffling immediately after that, like the whole crowd just started crying.
So I didn't have that during that scene, but I remember I was talking to Trey at football yesterday, and he hadn't had a chance to see it yet, and he was like, was it good? And I was like, dude, it for me, like, I love No Way Home, but I also know that's attached with Sony, so there's always like a feeling
of
I
course.
Have with that.
Yeah.
And I love Shang-Chi. Go back and listen to that episode. We all, you know, raved about that movie. Mm-hmm. But like, I think this is the best thing that they've done in Phase 4. I think as a whole, we have our problems with it. There are problems with this movie.
Yeah.
But I think as a whole, this is the best thing done with Phase 4.
I think it's easily the best movie in Phase 4.
And I told Trey that, and he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, dude. Like, he said above No Way Home. I'm like, no, dude. I think No Way Home has a different place for me because it's Spider-Man. Like, that's a whole different thing. And I grew up with those other characters, like the you know, with Willem Dafoe back. You know, it's a whole different thing. I'm talking like Sony aside, straight MCU what they've created. This movie is the best thing they've done in Phase 4. And he's like, wow, okay.
It's neck and neck for me between like, this and Shang-Chi, because Shang-Chi, like, it had a lot of heavy lifting to do of creating this whole like other conversation about like the world and this.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that because basically like what Guardians did at one point.
Yep. Yeah. Guardians broke a mold that was fucking.
Certain points have hit and.
Yeah, it broke it open so you can do more stuff.
Exactly.
But Black Panther has seemed to hit just like that emotional gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
which holds its place, which if you look at it, like even in the comics and stuff, Wakanda, Black Panther and everything was always an emotional, we stand where we stand, mm-hmm. but yet we understand how the world works type.
Wakanda's been very hard-headed in the comics, but again, a lot of these separate nations, you're having the same thing happen with Asgard a lot of the time, like Atlantis as well. Like all these separate nations have very hard-headed leaders that don't want to help.
Compromise.
They don't want to compromise their culture, their position.
The egomaniacs.
Yeah.
I mean, and we saw how they wrote in our Black Panther for the MCU. I mean, T'Challa was very much following in his father's footsteps up to a certain point with that mentality.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
All the way through till the end of the first Black Panther movie, where he's like, no, we can help the world with our resources. Yeah. We don't have to let them have access to it, but we can come out of our fucking dome and help the world with our shit.
We don't have to open the floodgates, but we can give them a little pieces here and there.
We can just bring it out.
Right.
And that was the beauty of that.
That whole scene with the French mercenaries and her having that, like, oh, my sweet summer child kind of energy to the UN about, like, oh, no, honey, we're not doing that. It was fucking...
Yeah.
When they just bring them in, it's like, here are the peeps. I could have killed them, but I didn't,
welcome.
What made it even more beautiful is that at first you don't know who it is, and then it's when she's like, and it's France.
when she talks in French to that French ambassador, you're like,
right.
Oh, gotcha, bitch. Gotcha, bitch.
And then the French ambassador, like, ooh.
Yeah, you notice she got
now, why did she not go out in cuffs is the other thing.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Like, in actual world purposes,
especially in the UN, she would have.
Like, you are in jail after that for the first season.
Well, also risking France's involvement in the UN. Like,
Exactly. So much at stake there.
But
like,
comic books.
I know.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh.
Now, there are people out there who are complaining that it doesn't represent genuine global politics well enough. I'm like,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
We're talking about fish people.
Also, how do they think politics works? I think it represents politics very well for the underhanded backdoor fucking dealings and this shit we don't know about.
And even though, like, you 100% blatantly get called out, have all the evidence against you,
you just nothing walk away?
Nothing has happened to you.
How is that not a representation of politics?
Right. Well, like, right.
The interesting thing is that the point of view that the dead guy was using was that the U.S. would try to destroy Wakanda with sanctions and all kinds of stuff, but... first of all, that's not going to work because Wakanda is a fully self-contained country.
Yeah, it's a closed state.
They don't even interact economically with the world.
We don't need you, bitch.
Well, but that
sanctions on Wakanda.
And also, they're the most powerful country in the world, which is an interesting point because they're probably the size of Central Virginia or whatever, probably smaller than that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the most powerful country in the world. Because of that, they don't get interacted with like they're an Eastern, like, bloc country or something. They're,
no.
Yeah.
But that's also where the movie is more accurate, because when the U.S., and I forget the actor's name, but he's such a great actor from, like, the West Wing and a bunch of other stuff. I love that guy. You know who I'm talking about.
Mm.
You know.
Oh, yeah. He was the U.S. representative.
Mm. Yeah.
He's in God of War, too.
You're right. But the way he represented the U.S. as in, like, we're going to do a full frontal attack. And they're like, oh, really? Like, what type of attack are we going to do? And he's like, destabilization. We just can't fight them. We're going to destabilize the fuck out of them.
You can't destabilize them, bro.
But that just shows how underhanded it was, because that's obviously a lot more sneaky shit you got to do to destabilize.
And also, how is that not a representation of actual politics?
That's what, I'm agreeing with that. I know.
I was like, how are people saying this is not a representation of politics?
And also, if you break it down, like, what that is suggesting is that the United States is completely cool with us doing underhanded shit or being in power and having the ability to do whatever the fuck we want to, and nobody's going to say anything to us about it. But the minute another country, no matter how mindful they are about things and how not underhanded they are, if they're in a position of power, it's like, oh, well, we got to get rid of them immediately. Well, yes, nobody should have that level of power.
That's kind of openly a point of the movie.
Like the U.S. is worse than Wakanda with the handling being in charge, and they're like, we can't have that. We can't have that nation
and
in charge.
And even with Shuri and Namor coming to a very shaky agreement, but it's an agreement on, we're going to be cool, just do this. That's politics. Yeah, like, yeah. That's the ultimate politics right there.
So much of the political
side
of it is like, you can't fuck around in my sandbox.
Yeah.
I own this shit. I'm the one that does all the fucked up shit. You can't do anything fucked up.
Yeah.
No one else can. Just me.
I don't think Namor likes sand like Anakin doesn't like sand.
No. You know, just saying. No, Anakin doesn't like hot lava, so burnt sand.
Well, he doesn't.
So molten sand.
Melty sand.
He learned to have a new dislike, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, there is
he learned.
Heat and dryness are involved. They don't like.
Side note, can we just talk about how painful it must have been for her to pull out his fucking little feathery wings? That scene got me, brother.
The whole crowd went, whoa!
Right? Whoa, just bro. Like, yeah, that.
Like, took it to him.
And you saw how he kind of tried to fly and was like totally like limp flying or something.
No, setting him on fire was one of the most brutal things I've ever seen portrayed in the MCU.
Yeah.
That's true too, yeah.
I gotta say, I do love the, and they did the same thing with the first Black Panther, and whenever Black Panther was involved in any other MCU property, bringing the technology in, but the way Shuri set his ass up with the technology, with the explosion.
Right.
It was beautiful.
It was smooth.
It was fucking beautiful.
Smooth.
I loved it.
And on that note, we've got one last little bit to do before we are done with this episode. We can't do the episode as long as the actual movie is. Earlier bedtimes nowadays.
Yes.
We got old.
Yeah, I got children. I got to wake up in the morning.
We do have a little segment, though, that we want to do before we get out of here called Making a Drunken Scene.
Making a Drunken Scene.
So I realize that intro sounds like a colonizer.
I mean, but is it our favorite colonizer?
It is.
Ah.
Wait, really? That's so sweet. not colonizer. My fucking people are Swedish. We weren't colonizing shit.
No.
We were pillaging shit for a while there. Yeah. But
systems early.
Yeah, exactly.
Then also freezing your asses off.
Yep, eating bitter.
Discovering how to make the better bookshelf.
Lutefisk and shit.
Yeah. We'll just go to Minnesota. It's fine.
Yeah, right.
Your people are from like Lovecraft country, like the real Lovecraft country.
Yeah, right.
Cold,
yeah.
Shit. Seawater. Fucking.
Nope.
Yeah, anytime you're rolling around Sweden and you hear chanting, just other direction.
Other direction.
Other direction.
Watch the movie. Anytime you want to plan on traveling to that area, just watch Dagon and. Yeah, know what you're getting into.
It's either some Lovecraftian shit or a black metal show. So either way,
that's always so tempting, though.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Like it's just like
which one is it? Which one is it?
I'm looking for death face paint. Way. You know,
die either way.
That's you could be the sacrifice. You are the foreigner in that country at that point. So you know.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got there's one 2-person bit here between Ramonda and Namor. And we've got some other single line choices here. We've got an Umbaku, we've got an Okoye, we've got a Ramonda.
I'll do the Namor, the big one.
Does anybody want to do Ramonda? That's not me.
I'll do Ramonda.
Okay.
You got saved on that one.
I mean, there's no other choices here that are safe for me. I don't see any. Martin Freeman lines. So, I'll do the other Ramonda. If Steven, do you have a choice here? You can do Namor or M'Baku or Okoye.
I thought about M'Baku. I'll do that, but I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
It's inflections.
So, Scotty, when you and Tondi are ready to do the Ramonda and Namor,
the Submariner appears.
Can you see it? All right.
Can you see?
Okay.
All right.
Where's it? Oh, there we go. Does
the Submariner appears?
Oh.
Yeah, we're just in this little section here.
Stop right there. Who are you? How did you get in here?
See, now, if I did that,
Don't.
There's a reason why I chose Namor right off the bat. Looks around. This place is amazing.
Nice.
The air is pristine and the water. My mother told me stories about a place like this. A protected land with people who never have to leave, who never have to change who they were. What reason do you have to reveal your secret to the world?
I am not in the habit of repeating myself. Who are you?
This is where I'm going to fuck it up. My people call me Kukulkan, but my enemies call me Namor.
You were kind of doing like a waspy Alabama beat poet kind of thing.
I mean, I figured that was the safest bet with that character.
It's a choice.
Yeah,
which, by the way, you also pronouncing Kukulkan Khan sounds like you're talking about something else completely.
I know that's what I was afraid of. Yeah. So that's see,
my people call me K K K. Jesus Christ!
He said it, not me.
Do you think we could get away the title the Knights of the Cuckoo Khan?
No. Man, I love that so much.
Yeah.
Let's try this one. All right. Try this one.
You can't do it, but I love it. No.
Call me Triple K.
Oh, God.
No.
No, my God.
What is wrong? No.
All right. That's Triple K.
It's like Triple H's problematic kid.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. God damn it. All right.
We waited until the end to get that far. Mm. So, all right.
I'm going to do Ramonda here. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out together. All right.
Jesus. I am queen of the most powerful nation in the world. And my entire family is gone. Have I not given everything? I don't know if that's bad too.
I don't know. You just like Valley Girl the shit out of
Which I feel is the safe bet.
It's fine.
Well, that's the safe bet.
It's fine.
I'll take it. It's okay. We'll allow it.
Not quite as affecting, unfortunately. But.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, she could have gone a different way with the reading. You know, I was just offering another choice there.
Miss Bassett, I know that you're great at what you do, and you know. It's probably appropriate for this movie, but just so we can have some alts.
Hear me out.
Read it like Clueless.
Clueless. Yeah. All right, Steven, what you got?
I got M'Baku.
M'Baku, yeah. Talking about Namor.
His people do not call him general or king. They call him the Feather Serpent God. Killing him will risk eternal war.
I am crazy offended right now.
Some impressive pronunciations are happening.
That was on purpose.
This is the point where I'm stepping out of the room silently, and
I was trying. I honestly was trying to sound as white as I could, and yeah, I
did. What in the Ace Ventura when nature calls is going on here?
I just got to go on the other spectrum of offensive. I just had to go the other way.
I'm sorry, but your octave was not high enough.
Yeah,
sorry.
Oh, fair.
You know,
no, there are white men with some bass.
Yeah.
Not a lot. The Yamo be there guy. That's it. I think that's all we got. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, let's get the fuck out of here. Thank you so much for this travel down tragedy with us of Wakanda Forever.
Honestly, they call him Mike the Hobbit Bigot.
Honestly, like, absolutely love the movie. It is rough. It is a challenging watch at times.
It's raw.
It's very raw.
Punchy in the gut emotion.
It is
for sure.
One of those things, like, this kind of falls in the same level of, like, I don't watch Endgame a ton because it's an exhausting trip.
Sometimes you don't want to go through the fucking roller coaster when you just want to watch a movie.
Sometimes you just want to watch Ant-Man and Wasp and have a good time. You know?
Exactly. There you go.
Endgame is a roller coaster, though. It's like, oh, it's fun. Oh, a little bit sad. Fun, sad. This is like, oh, it's going down. 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 Into infinity.
Yeah.
20,000 leagues under the sand.
Just complete darkness. Yeah. I'm engulfed.
It just gets sucked into one of those weird water tunnels that they use. Yep. And, you know.
There you go.
But yeah, thank you for joining us on this conversation about Wakanda Forever. I want to hear what you guys think. Join us on our social media. You can find all that stuff at GUIpodcast.com. Tell us what you think about the movie, what they could have improved, or what you really liked about the movie. What you thought about our terrible accents that we used on
I don't need to hear
it. You're welcome.
Let's just pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's
they
good
call
idea.
Us GUI.
Okay, all right, we're getting off the air here.
That was like borderline like Chinese Connection.
Yeah, that was.
Thank you
to my myself.
Thank you to the panel, thank you to Creepazoids for our intro and outro, Dead by Dawn, and we'll find you next time for another episode. I'm Mike the Hobbit.
I'm Lowdown.
Join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
They call us time for outro.
GUIpodcast.com.
Cha cha la la. Cha cha la la. Cha cha la la. Cha cha la la.